Now, I'm going to be talking about how we can see this thinking in this notion of global governance as we read through articles from, for instance, the Yale Center for the Study of Globalization. I heard recently that 60% of the world's people live under a dictatorship. And as we recall that power's allegiance is only to itself, its sole concern to achieve perfection of the species and of the state, I think we can begin to see the strategy in this, that there is a purpose, what we've been talking about, keeping the cattle herded. And what I'm arguing is that the left doesn't think strategically, but power does. And we the people must begin to see the long-term, the overall strategy in power's consistent and unrelenting forward movement advocacies. There is an article I want to call our attention to that sheds further light, I think, on this issue of why dictatorship is perfectly acceptable to power. I mean, there's obvious reasons in the sense that it can't install a totalitarian way of thinking unless there's control of us and what we can think. Now, in this article called An Agreement on Arms with No Teeth by Caleb Rossiter in the Epoch Times of April 11 to 17, 2013, he's extremely disappointed that there was no, from the left, or in particular from the relevant nonprofit organizations who are responsible for monitoring these things, no challenge to the recent arms trade treaty that was approved on April 2nd by the UN General Assembly. And he writes, how did we end up here with a treaty that doesn't really do anything but generate reports? The blame for this lame treaty falls as much on the international human rights movement as on self-interested governments. U.S. advocacy groups started, and I'm still quoting Mr. Rossiter, U.S. advocacy groups started developing this treaty 20 years ago because they wanted to reduce the devastation of civil wars in developing nations. These civil wars, like those today in the Congo, Somalia, and Afghanistan, cause millions of deaths every decade. He said millions of deaths every decade. Most deaths, he writes, are not from combat itself, but from the disease and starvation that result when refugees flee from their homes and means of support. The American groups and a bipartisan congressional coalition led by the late Senator Mark Hatfield and former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney drafted a code of conduct for governments to be eligible for U.S. arms sales. The original code of conduct included a ban on selling arms to dictators. A version written by a coalition of Nobel Peace Prize winners led by former Costa Rican President Oscar Arias puts this more elegantly. Arms could be sold only to a country that, quote, allows its citizens to choose their representatives through free and fairly contested periodic elections that feature secret balloting and permits its citizens to express their political views through the freedom of speech, unquote. Then Mr. Rossiter writes, the code faltered in the late 1990s after both houses of Congress rejected it in floor votes. Amnesty International revived it by working with British Prime Minister Tony Blair on a European Union version that focused not on how a government had taken power, but on what it did with its weapons. The EU code replaced the ban on arming dictators with a call for exporters to weigh the, quote, risk that the weapons could be used for international repression, unquote. The definition of repression focused on violent acts and excluded any consideration of dictatorship. This is when the code was neutered, leading to the current UN treaty. He asks, why did Amnesty International go this route? The human rights movement got its start in the 1970s and made a huge impact by rejecting claims of national sovereignty and criticizing governments, elected or not, for torturing and killing dissidents. But it was then caught in a human rights trap laid by polite dictators who simply learned less violent ways to crush dissent. Groups like Amnesty International don't classify dictatorship itself as an abuse of a human right, for example, the right to choose one's government, so they can support a ban on arms transfers only when a dictatorship is at some moment violently repressing its people, unquote. So where we're at now in the official consensus power is trying to craft is that violence is out, but dictatorship, if it's polite, is in. Definitely in, at least for those peoples of which power is afraid. And ultimately, of course, that's all of us, but of course, always some more than others.